from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Good afternoon, beautiful people. Happy, happy Wednesday. Yes, it is hump day, February 4th. As always, I am the man behind the mic, your host of Current Sports, Al Martin. Folks, we've got a fun-filled show for you today. I cannot wait to bring in studio. That's right, in studio, my guest for today. His name is Ted Zale, and he is the author of Tony Zale, The Man of Steel. Now, if you don't know who Tony Zale is, I don't know how long you've been sleeping, folks, but we plan to wake you up today, okay? You do not want to miss that chat. It's an unbelievable book about the tale of one incredible boxer. We'll also be talking about, yes, it's my favorite time of the sporting year. Did you sense the sarcasm in that? Yeah, signing day, folks. Today is signing day. We'll talk about D'Antonio's recruiting class and where it ranks nationally. We'll also be giving you the top reasons to still be optimistic about Susie Merchant, the MSU women's hoop season. All of that and so much more, folks. But let's start the show like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this February 4th. All right, the day has come, folks. Yes, National Signing Day is finally here, and it stands now for Michigan State as the number 24th class in the nation with 18 recruits, according to Rivals.com, good for third in the Big Ten behind number 8 Ohio State and number 14 Penn State. Now, UM comes in with the 61st ranked class in the nation. The Wolverines could always make a late splash, but as of now, appear to be done. The Spartans are waiting on announcements from two recruits, 3-star Cassius Pete and 3-star Muffy Hunt. Nice name. All right, Kirk Cousins, folks, former MSU and current Washington Redskins QB, Kirk Cousins will be the keynote speaker at the Lansing Regional Chamber of Commerce Economic Club Luncheon. Now, the event is set to take place on February 26th at the Kellogg Hotel and Conference Center from 11:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. And Current Sports will be in the house for that one to chat it up with Kirk. All right, Brady Hoke, folks. Reports that former U of M head coach Brady Hoke was headed to Notre Dame as an assistant appear to be inaccurate.
I have so much respect for Brian Kelly, and Brian and I have been friends for many, many years, coaching against each other in the MAC, and him and I had a discussion. I know that that program he's doing a great job with, but I am not doing coaching. I'm not going to South Bend.
Very well said, Brady. All right, Hoke has denied joining Brian Kelly's staff in South Bend. All right, last night the Detroit Pistons blazed the Heat 108-91 in the D. DJ Augustine racked up 25 points and 13 assists. The Pistons set the tone early in the game, letting the Heat know they were in for business, finishing the first half 53-39. Can you believe that? Now the Heat never took the lead, even though Chris Bosh had 34 points.
Bosh with the drive, stripped by Moose. Pistons with numbers. KCP with a jam.
Yes, KCP contributed 18 points. Andre Drummond had 14 points, and Kyle Singler also had 13 points, and Greg Monroe had 12 points and 9 rebounds. The Pistons take on the Pacers tonight in Indiana. All right, Anderson Silva, how about this news, folks? Arguably the best pound-for-pound fighter in the land defeated Nick Diaz this past Saturday in his first bout since severely breaking his leg in 2013. Now, although the win may come with a certain asterisk attached to it, news broke last night that Silva tested positive for steroids in out-of-competition tests administered back on January 9th. Now, it was also reported that Diaz failed a post-test for marijuana, meaning both of the UFC 183 main event competitors could be facing a suspension and or a fine, and it will go down like the fight never even happened, folks. How about that? All right. ESPN's Adam Schefter reported on January 25th that Josh Gordon, who is in stage 4 of the NFL's substance abuse policy, failed a league-issued substance abuse test this time for alcohol. Now, yesterday, The league officials suspended Gordon for a minimum of 1 year without pay. Now, this marks the third suspension for Gordon, not including the Browns team issued suspension on Gordon for the last week of the regular season for missing a team activity. Now, ESPN's Chris Carter had some strong thoughts on this one.
He doesn't think that he has a problem. You know, everyone gets to a crossroad in making decisions. And obviously, he hadn't hit rock bottom enough. Now, Josh doesn't think he has a problem. So I'm not going to say he has a problem. But he's been suspended for 3 years in a row. He's in stage four of the drug policy. Now, how do you get there? You don't get there by eating Skittles.
Preach, Chris. Preach. All right, Lance Armstrong hit two parked cars on December 28, 2014, fled the scene, and let his longtime girlfriend, Anna Hansen, take the blame for it. Really? All right, and Gino Auriemma gets win number 900.
It's about the people that you get to share it with. You know, I saw some people here that I haven't seen in a while, and I've talked to some people that I haven't talked to in a while just to thank them for what they've done. You know, we got a long way to go this year. We got a lot of work left to do, and I know this is 900, but there's six games in March that are going to mean as much as the previous 900.
Yeah, Geno's team blew out the Cincinnati Bearcats 96-36. Some interesting headliners there, to say the least. All right, folks, our phone lines are open, and they will stay open just like each and every current sports show all the way up until 2 p.m., all right? If you want to call in and share your thoughts on anything, and I do mean anything, that is on your sports noggin, call in right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I will read that live right on the show on our airwaves. And you can even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. An exciting show, folks. As I said at the top of the hour, we have a fantastic guest stopping in to talk about a new book that is now on everyone's shelves, every bookstore you can imagine. Ted Zell is his name. He is the author of Tony Zell, The Man of Steel. Now, if you don't know who Tony Zell is, he was one incredible fighter back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. One of the best all time, folks. Tony actually has a nephew, and that is Ted. So Ted has decided to write this fantastic book, kind of recounting the life of his uncle. And, you know, it's a lot of ups and downs in this story. It's very interesting how Tony entered into the world of boxing at a very, very young age. It's very interesting to see how he became a champion in that realm, and to also sort of analyze the downfall of Tony Zell's life. And I'll talk about more of the downfall later on with Ted. But Ted will be live in studio for an interview that you do not want to miss, folks. That'll be around our second segment of Current Sports. We will also be talking about the Pistons. How about the Pistons, folks? I tell you what, I was ready to pronounce, you know, and you guys know I'm a big Piston fan. I was ready to pronounce my Pistons pretty much dead after Brandon Jennings had gone down for the rest of the year. But I must say, DJ Augustine has done one incredible job, folks, filling in for Brandon Jennings. We'll also talk about, yes, as you just heard the thoughts from Chris Carter, Josh Gordon getting suspended by the NFL for 1 year. How about that? And, yes, the failed drug test of Anderson Silva and Nick Diaz, two fighters who fought in the most recent UFC pay-per-view match. So how about that? I just can't believe that, folks. So, again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know that each and every Wednesday, Current Sports TV tapes, and tonight is the night, folks. That's right. I'll be inviting David Thomas. That's right. DT will be in the house. If you don't know who David Thomas is, he was actually a member of that 2000 men's championship basketball team, college basketball team, along with the likes of Mateen Cleaves and so on and so forth. David Thomas, he's a fantastic guy. He's done some great things off the court as well, stemming from his David Thomas basketball camp that takes place each and every summer, to, of course, his philanthropic work, other philanthropic endeavors, I should say, to his work with the Michigan State University Federal Credit Union. And now he holds the position as the Director of Operations and Technology for the MSU women's basketball team. So I'm very excited to pick David's brain about his playing time and also his new position with the MSU women's basketball team. All of that and so much more. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience tonight at 6 p.m., all you got to do is go to WKAR.org. Well, folks, let's start the show, shall we? It is my least favorite time of the sporting year. That's right. It is National Signing Day, where many high school recruits across the board will be taking their respective podiums and putting on their respective hats, donning which college they will be taking their athletic talents to. Now, at approximately 2:45 today, head coach of the MSU men's football team, Mark D'Antonio, he'll be taking the podium to reveal his class and kind of go one by one and answer questions from the media on his recruiting class, one that is certainly getting a lot of national attention. Just about every ranking, preseason recruiting ranking that you look at, Mark D'Antonio's class is listed in the top 25. How about that? Certainly something to tip your cap at, because it shows that this program is certainly on the up and up, to say the least. So, and I tell you what, this is one of Alex's, on the complete contrast, it's one of my least favorite times of the year, but Alex loves recruiting. He is a recruiting junkie. Alex, happy National Signing Day. How you doing, my man?
Yeah, man. It's a good day, exciting day. Too bad there isn't too many last-minute signings for Michigan and Michigan State. Not too many, but it's still a very exciting time.
Yeah, well, you know what? I believe we have some breaking news right now, because we do have two students live in studio with us. They love recruiting as well. They do a fantastic job. They are a part of some of our new students who will be working with us day in and day out here on Current Sports TV and in radio. Matt and Ben, how you guys doing, man? Happy National Signing Day.
Doing pretty good, man. Thanks for having me on the show. We have some breaking news. I don't know if you want me to say
Yes, go ahead.
All right, Ben. So Cassius Pete, the linebacker defensive end who decommitted from UCLA, is going to be a Spartan. And we are also awaiting a decision from Mufi Hunt, another defensive end who's going to do a two-year Mormon trip. But he's choosing between BYU, I believe, not sure who else it is. But, yeah, he's making his decision shortly, and we're awaiting it now.
Wow, he's doing a two-year Mormon trip?
Yes.
That's an interesting story right there, to say the least. All right, so Cassius Pete has just signed his national letter of intent just now.
Yes, and that makes 9 out of our 19 recruits from the South or the West.
There you have that. All right, breaking news there. So I'm pretty sure we may see, and I'm looking here on Rivals.com, another player that is committed but not yet signed is also Drake Martinez, defensive back from California. Is that accurate, guys?
He is officially signed as of now.
He is officially signed as of right now. Gotcha. Yep. So this is changing by the hour, by the minute, by the second, by the moment. All right. Just to kind of go through Mark D'Antonio's recruiting class for this year. Now, of course, again, a lot of national notoriety when you talk about this year's recruiting class for Coach D. Number 25 in the nation, according to Rivals.com. Number 22 in the nation, according to 247sports.com, number 18 by scout.com. And again, you know, of the 18 commitments, 11 of them are ranked as four-star recruits. It's really interesting when you look at this, because you're starting to see an interesting reach when you look at where these recruits are coming from. Normally in the past, and Alex brought up a good point yesterday's show, how you're starting to see different recruits from, you know, Texas and Arizona and Kentucky. I mean, this is something new. It shows that, of course, you know, with success breeds attention. And Michigan State going to a Rose Bowl and having a Cotton Bowl victory and doing it in the fashion that they did this season. Truly remarkable stuff we're talking about, folks. And you better believe that recruits are at home watching the success that this team has been having these past few years, and they want to be a part of it. A few names that kind of stand out for me. I'm looking here, Brian Lewerke, QB out in Phoenix, Arizona. He's a four-star recruit. You're hearing his name thrown around a lot, because he's a quarterback who can also burn you on the ground and with his arm. Actually, early this morning, checked out his highlight tape. He looks pretty savvy. He looks pretty savvy. Now, again, you got to take that with a grain of salt because a highlight tape doesn't show you the bad plays, okay? But Brian Lewerke, very, very impressive. Also want to shout out Larry Scott. I think Larry Scott is also another name that you want to talk about. Also, some more breaking news here. Linebacker Andrew Dow, I believe. Andrew Dow is actually one of the recruits on the list. Matt, you can actually talk about that since you have it up right now.
I mean, it's been an impressive day for MSU in general, and then you're looking at Andrew Dow, who has some eye-popping numbers from last year as a starting safety. He recorded 153 tackles with 2 tackles for a loss, 6 picks, and 3 returned for a touchdown with 11 pass breakups. And MSU was already sitting at the number 24 spot on Rivals before the Cassius Pete commit. So it's just looking like a good day for D'Antonio and his staff and his second straight top 25 class.
Yeah. Ben, what are just your thoughts overall on recruiting? I'm going to go to Alex next. Do you think it's kind of overrated? For me, it is. I've voiced my opinion on it multiple times on the show. Recruiting, it's great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you get some of these 4-star recruits are going to pan out. Let's be honest here. They are going to pan out and become great players. But how many times have we seen the 2-star recruit go on, or even some walk-ons for that matter, go on to have these unbelievable college careers, go on to have great careers in the pros? I just think the attention that we put on it sometimes as media members and as fans alike, it sometimes gets a bit overblown. I don't know if you can echo those sentiments. I don't know.
Well, you see, D'Antonio, he's had quite a run of success here. And you see, beforehand, when he wasn't so nationally known, he'd have to go get those 2 and 3 stars. Well, now those 2 and 3 stars are turning into 3 and 4 stars. And that's only better for him because it's only going to help all the talent and the development that they do. It's still all going to stay the same. It's just the talent level is just going to be upped. And that's only going to do good things for Michigan State. Honestly, today has been a home run for him. And if he can add Mufii Hunt, and I realize his scholarship might not be coming around until 2017 because of the 2-year trip, that would just be a home run for the class in general.
Yeah, certainly, Matt.
I mean, you have to look at, like, D'Antonio's development over the last couple of years. Darquez Dennard was a 2-star recruit coming out of Georgia. And if you can turn a 2-star recruit into a first-round NFL draft pick, you got to think that a 4-star recruit is going to have a good chances.
Yeah, certainly. Again, you talk about those 2-star recruits. You bring up a good point there because Le'Veon Bell also, Darquez Dennard, Trey Wayans, a guy who's predicted in the first round to go first round in the NFL draft right now. He was also a 2-star recruit. So what I said yesterday on the show was that I think it speaks volumes to the fact that, again, D'Antonio can also harness whatever talent, whether it be 2, 3, 4-star recruits here at Michigan State, and can develop that talent. That's the key. It's fine to get high recruiting classes. I mean, we've seen the University of Michigan do it these past few years left and right. But it's about developing that talent once they hit the gridiron on your campus. Alex, overall thoughts. Are there some names here that when you look at this recruiting class, because there are a few names here that kind of stand out to me. Is there anybody that you think is going to be a stud right off the bat here at Michigan State?
Yeah, hard to say so far with the depth chart, but I can say this. And when it comes to recruiting, yeah, there's always the stars. And there are many instances where a 5-star doesn't turn out to be a good NFL player, or a 3-star ends up being a 5-star. Or like you said, with Trey Wayans or Darquez Dennard, sometimes the ratings don't really have a specific say. But here's what I can tell you about recruiting. It's extremely important, not because of the stars, but because of the specimens and the actual talent that you can get at the high school level. When you walk in and you see a guy like Shalee Calhoun with that size and that ability in high school, regardless of what his rating is, you know he's going to be good. And there's a reason why Ohio State has had a lot of success over the years with phenoms like Ezekiel Elliott, with some really good playmakers, just because you know that they're very dominant at the high school level. So I think that recruiting is important from a talent standpoint, but I agree with you from a star standpoint and the way where just because they're a high rating or a certain star doesn't mean they're going to be good. But I still do think that there is relevancy and recruiting good talent at the high school level. I think you have to put importance on that.
You know what's so interesting? You know, I was actually listening to Mike and Mike like I do every morning. I was driving in listening to Mike and Mike. And, they had a few thoughts on signing day and just the overall star system that is implemented in the high school realm when you kind of boil this whole thing down. And, you know, Mike Golick brought up an interesting point. I didn't know that when a high school player, let's say this high school player is ranked as, let's say, he's in his junior year, right? And, you know, he's tearing it up, And, you know, the rating system rates him as a four-star recruit. And I forget the actual athlete that he talked about, but he was somewhere out in Texas. He got injured. Takes about, I want to say, half of the next season off. And without even playing another down, his rating went from a four-star recruit all the way down to a two-star recruit just because he hadn't played. So that's why I say, again, he could still be ideally a four-star recruit because, again, it was that time off that kind of just hammered his overall evaluation. So, again, I don't put too much harp on the how many stars a recruit has. It's all about the system that those players are entering. And, again, you're starting to see, and you brought this yesterday, Alex, you're starting to see an interesting reach now because of the notoriety that MSU football is starting to have. The brand of MSU football is on the rise. I think a lot of credit, and we barely brought up his name yesterday, Alex, is Curtis Blackwell. He is such an integral part to this puzzle. I mean, anyone you talk to, anybody on that coaching staff you talk to, they talk about how Curtis is always on the recruiting trail, how Curtis is always making calls and trying to make, you know, is always on the road trying to vie for that next top commit, that next guy. Curtis is changing things around. You know what, Alex? He's actually going to be on the show very, very soon, so you don't want to miss Current Sports in the coming days, folks. But I think that's also another key piece of this puzzle and a great move by Mark D'Antonio to bring Curtis to this incredible staff. Guys, final thoughts on recruiting?
I guess on the flip side, you have to look at things at U of M and say that it's not going to be a quick turnaround. In 2013, they had the number 5 class, according to Rivals, and right now they have the number 61 class. It's just going to take some time in Ann Arbor, and I think people are going to have to be patient.
So you think, you know, and I feel like a lot of people out in Ann Arbor with the hire of Jim Harbaugh, hey, let's be honest here. A lot of people out in Ann Arbor are going to expect U of M to have success right off the bat because of the hire, because of the history that is the Maize and Blue. And, you know, and again, I think it's going to take some time, too. It's very rare when you see a new coaching staff coming to a situation. I don't care who it is. It could be Vince Lombardi, for goodness sake. I don't care who that coach is. It's very hard for them to have success when they enter a situation that has been down for the past few seasons now.
Right. Harbaugh has to get his guys in there. It'll be probably 2 years at the earliest. 3 years is more likely that they'll be up and going again. But, yeah, they'll figure it out in Michigan. I'm pretty confident in that. Harbaugh's a hell of a coach. But, yeah, as for Michigan State, you know, they say stars don't matter. But, you know, you look at the Super Bowl, there are no 5 stars. But you look at the college football playoff, you saw Oregon with 5 stars, or Ohio State, Alabama, and Florida State. They had tons of 5 stars. So there's both ways to everything, and we'll just see what kind of quality men that Mark D'Antonio brought in for this year's class.
Folks, what do you think? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Call in and give your thoughts about recruiting and National Signing Day. Definitely interested to hear those thoughts. Alex, let's transition now to very briefly to a subject that we didn't get to yesterday. Of course, our top five was centered on Susie Merchant and the MSU women's basketball team. Now, of course, they have been having an up-and-down season plagued with injuries, illnesses. If you look at the minutes that, you know, players like Tori Jankowska and Ariel Powers are logging, I mean, it's close to 40 a game, folks. At times, sometimes 40 a game, 40 minutes a game, playing an entire game. This team has gone through a lot. And then, of course, with the drama, added drama of Jasmine Lumpkin deciding to leave the squad in the middle of the year, Jasmine Hines out for the rest of the year as well. A lot has gone down this season. And, you know, there's kind of a mixed emotion as to the perception of this squad and whether or not they can pull things together and get a tourney bid. But you know what? I'm going to have an interesting twist on this thing right now. We're going to give you the top reasons to still be optimistic about the MSU women's basketball season. Here we go. 5-4-3-2-1. All right, folks, that's right. You know the music. Each and every Tuesday we usually do this, but we're bringing it to Wednesday because we didn't have a lot of time because we were bogged down, honestly, with a lot of recruiting talk. But I definitely will be remiss if I did not talk about Susie Merchant and the MSU women's basketball team. Now, again, they've been having a season that I think You know, it all depends on the kind of lens that you look at it with. Of course, when you look at the win and loss column, this squad is on the bubble. Without a doubt, folks. They are among now, I believe, second from last place in the Big Ten Conference, sitting at 11-11, 500 overall, 3-8 in the Big Ten Conference. So we're going to give you the top five reasons to sort of look at this thing with a glass half full type of mentality. And, you know, because I think there are a lot of aspects that you can really nitpick at this with. Alex, you want to start us off? Why should fans out there looking at the squad still be optimistic?
Yeah, and it starts with they have some things still to play for. My number five, there's still seven games left in the season, and there's still the Big Ten tournament. Yes, this team is really on the cusp. They're definitely on the bubble, if not maybe perhaps out of the tournament. But Al, here's the thing, man. A lot can happen, and there's still a lot of games left to play. So just in general, there still is a significant amount of the season left. That's my number five.
Yes, certainly. First off, you know, anytime you talk about women's basketball in any conversation, there are many that have a lot of mixed views on it because just the popularity of it, we know that, just turn on a WNBA game. I don't know if you saw this, an interesting story about Diana Taurasi, who actually is a very famous WNBA player. She's actually sitting out a year to go play in her hometown of Russia for an entire year. She's taking an entire year off because they are paying her better. And the level of competition may be a little bit better. So it's interesting because when you look at the popularity of women's basketball right here in America, it's not that great. But, when I first started covering Susie Merchant and the MSU women's basketball team, something that really stood out to me, when you go to these games, no matter what type of season they're having, still, when I go and cover Susie Merchant's team and look, the fan support is still there. I think the fact that with everything that has gone down this year, the fact that Spartan Nation is still showing up game in and game out to support Susie Merchant and that team is unbelievable, because there are a lot of fans out there who have said, okay, this is a down year for them. I won't even bother going. And coupled with the fact that this is women's basketball, it's really remarkable. And it's something I talked to Susie off the record about, and she just, you know, she on her behalf, I'm saying, hey, thank you on her behalf, because she is just amazed that records really don't matter in Spartan Nation sometimes. And she's just through the roof about, you know, how many fans still come out and support them. So number five for me has to be fan support. Number four, what is it, Alex?
That's a good one. Also, you know, you talk about fan support. It's going to be there Thursday with Michigan. You still have the Michigan game on Thursday. That, for me, is my number four. It's a rivalry. There's always a lot that goes on with that game. That's definitely something to play for.
Yeah, 7 p.m. tip right at the Breslin Center, actually. We'll be giving away tickets on tomorrow's Current Sports for that game. Number four, Alex, I think when you look at what's gone down this season, players are forced to step into roles that they normally aren't comfortable with stepping into. We've seen this year Anna Morrissey come in and play the point guard position and really do a relatively solid job. I've been very, very impressed with her. The season that Ariel Powers is having, I mean, my goodness, unbelievable. And she started last year, of course, with her freshman year. But to see the role that she is now currently on, unbelievable. But you're just starting to see, whenever you have only seven healthy bodies playing a lot of minutes, players are forced into roles that they normally aren't comfortable with playing. But this is going to be a year where that experience pays off. So in that regard, I think you got to look at that as well. And number three for me, also the Big Ten tourney, Alex. The Big Ten tourney is something, because I believe if they go deep in the Big Ten tourney, let's say, because you never know. You never know when a team is going to start to click. Let's say they start to click in the Big Ten tourney and rattle off a few wins and play in the finals. I think they book a ticket to the NCAA tourney.
I agree.
I really do.
You can't go wrong with that. Number three for me, you talk about the fans and the support. How about super fan Stephanie Russell, Al? If you've seen her at the games, she hasn't missed a game in years. I mean, there are fans that go there just to see the look on that girl's
face.
Didn't you
guys do a feature on her?
Yeah, and there's some other news organizations that did as well. But, yeah, I mean, that's just a phenomenal story, and she's obviously definitely really, really a part of the program there.
And that kind of goes along with the fan support as well. And number two and number one, I'll combine them right here. Susie Merchant, number two. I think Susie Merchant is one of the best coaches in the nation. To see the success that she's had and brought to this program ever since she's, you know, come from Eastern Michigan, from Ypsilanti to Eastern, from Eastern Michigan, excuse me, to East Lansing. It's been truly remarkable. She is so competitive. I mean, just talking with Susie and, you know, to be honest, I've never seen her this down about a year. I mean, this frustrated. But to know that a coach cares, you know, the fact that she cares and wants so bad to see her team succeed says a lot about her. And then number one, Ariel Powers again and Tori Jankowska. Those two are having phenomenal years. And the thing is so crazy about it is they're so young. I mean, Ariel Powers right now leads the nation in double-doubles. She had one against Ohio State on the road, a 76-62 loss for MSU. But Ariel Powers, you can guarantee that Ariel Powers is going to put up big numbers each and every game. And Tori Jankowska actually named Big Ten Player of the Week, co-Big Ten Player of the Week, last week. I mean, those two are a joy to watch. And I think a lot of, the reason why a lot of fans still go out to watch the games is to see what Powers and Jankowska are going to do on a nightly basis. They are certainly fun to watch. So I say all that, I'm a glass half full type of guy. There is always, always something to look forward to, no matter what type of year you're playing for, because I always say sports, a lot of times, records don't tell you the true story of the resiliency and the fight of a team. And that is certainly the case with Susie Merchant's team this year. All right, folks, well, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite our fantastic guest on this Current Sports. His name is Ted Zell. He is the author of Tony Zell, The Man of Steel. We'll talk about all of that and so much more with Ted. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Hey, happy hump day, folks. You guys know each and every Wednesday in our Current Sports TV studios, which are located right here on the campus of Michigan State University, we tape Current Sports TV. And tonight I'll be sitting down with a man who has won a ring at the college level in Division I men's basketball. Of course, he was a part of that 2000 Tom Izzo team that went all the way in the NCAA tournament. His name is David Thomas. David now is, he's still keeping local ties around the area. He is the director of operations and technology for the MSU women's basketball team. So David will join me tonight. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, there is still time. Just simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. Well, you know what? Our guest has now just entered the studio. He's sitting right across from me right now, and I am excited to pick his brain. I'm actually holding in my hands a really cool book entitled Tony Zell, The Man of Steel. The authors of the book are Ted Zell and Clay Moyle. They've done one fantastic job at sort of looking at the life of one of the greatest fighters to ever live. Of course, Tony Zell, that being Tony Zell. So Ted Zell joins me live in the studio to talk about the life of Tony and so much more. Ted, a pleasure. Thanks a lot for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Al, finally, and good to hear your voice on the radio all the time.
Oh, thanks a lot. So you're a listener then. Thanks a lot, Ted. Appreciate
you bet.
That. You bet. Well, I tell you what, this is one fantastic book. And you know what? The reason how we got connected was actually through a mutual friend, Bob Every. Bob Every, a good friend of mine. He is certainly a staple in the Mid-Michigan community. You know, he told me about this book, and I said, oh, yeah, I got to have one to talk about this. And it's real simple, folks. If you just Wiki or Google Tony Zell, I mean, you can read his entire story. It is one intriguing story with a lot of twists and turns. First off, to give us kind of just a, you know, to capitalize the life of Tony Zell for us, Ted, tell us about him as a fighter.
Well, number one, there are some ties to Michigan State for Tony Zell. A young fellow by the name of Chuck Davey, who fought out of Michigan State during the 50s and became quite a professional and really went up through the ranks. Tony, of course, was retired by the time Chuck Davey got into the ranks and decided to help him out a little bit when he had some upcoming fights, one particularly with Rocky Graziano.
Right.
Tony's fight career really, I don't want to say hinges on Rocky Graziano, But that trilogy of fights were the greatest of all trilogies. There hasn't been one that has replaced it to date.
Yeah, I was actually looking at it, and Ring Magazine actually listed it in its top 100 trilogies of all time. I mean, that's saying a lot.
You bet. And, of course, Tony fought out of Gary, Indiana, and worked out of Chicago, had two great fight managers, good promoters, really learned the game very well.
You know what's so interesting, Ted? In the book description, it talks about how Tony felt responsible. I want to go back now, back to the early years of Tony Zale. It talks about how he felt responsible for the death of his father and became really withdrawn as a young child. What exactly happened during that time?
Well, at age two, Tony had a problem with the measles and mumps at the same time. Mm-hmm. And, of course, being pretty ill, his dad decided that evening to go to the local pharmacy and ride his bike there so he could get some medication for him. Well, unfortunately, that bike ride ended in tragedy. It was the first bike car accident in the city of Gary, and it was a fatality.
Wow. So when that moment happened, I guess Tony kind of looked back and said, my goodness, I mean, I'm the one responsible for my father's death. So he kind of just kind of put himself in a box?
Sure, exactly. You know, as he grew up, everyone said, you know, it was because he was going to get your medicine, Tony. And, of course, it just kind of really ate at him over the years. And many times when he was in his 4- and 5-year-old age time frame, he would run to his mom and say, look it, I see Dad, he's coming on the bike. I see him riding. Here he's coming home.
Right.
And, of course, the truth was he wasn't.
Wow. That's very, very intriguing. So, naturally, I mean, you know, I've read stories of individuals, great individuals, who have dealt with some sort of adversity in their life, whether it be a close family member's death or anything. It could be anything. How did boxing become Tony's outlet? How did he get introduced to the sport?
Well, he actually got introduced by his older brothers. His two older brothers, my dad and his Uncle John, became all Middle States boxing champions as amateurs. That would have been comparable to today's Golden Gloves.
Wow.
And, of course, watching them, since they were quite a bit older than him, watching them in the ring, Tony would imagine himself there. And as he realized that he was so withdrawn, he began to show himself and show his skills in the ring. He would imitate his brothers' battles.
Right.
And actually daydream about how he might have fought that fight. When he fought, my dad fought out in Boston for the Eastern belt.
Okay.
And as a result, my dad had gone to the finals, and Tony and my Uncle John were there to watch him and cheer him on. My dad knocked his opponent down 5 times.
And he got back up 5 times.
In 3 rounds.
Right.
And lost the fight.
Whoa.
And Tony couldn't believe it. He had to find a knockout punch. So he continued to drill and practice in the family, garage. Back then they were barns.
Okay, gotcha.
He trained in the makeshift ring that they had set up, and with the punching bags made out of good old straw, and actually developed what was called his knockout punch, his signature. A right to the body, left hook to the chin. And not many stood up to it.
Wow.
Including Rocky Graziano.
What a story. So at what age did Tony start to fight? I mean, because I know your father, his brothers, started to fight, I'm sure, at a young age. What age did Tony kind of take to the sport?
Tony went into the sport actually at age 15.
15 years old fighting.
15 years old.
That is pretty remarkable. Now, of course, you brought up Rocky Graziano multiple times. I want to dive into that trilogy. Now, again, the fights with Rocky Graziano in 1946, 47, and 48. The fights, again, named to Ring Magazine's Fights of the Year. Can you kind of take us through those three fights and what exactly happened to it?
Sure. Fight number one was in Yankee Stadium, New York.
Big arena.
Big arena. About 49,000 people attended. First round, Tony uses his left hook, puts Rocky down. Second round, Rocky gets up, hammering away with his right hand, puts my uncle down. Third round, my uncle comes back, nails him with a left hook, right to the body, left to the body. right to the body, left hook, Rocky's down. Fourth round, Tony continues to work his way around, a little bit slower, looking for a good knockout. Rocky hits him with a right, puts him down.
Wow.
Fifth round, here we are. Everybody's saying, there's no way Tony's going to stand up to this. His legs look like rubber. Lo and behold, Tony comes back, hits Rocky with a right and left to the body, left hook, Rocky goes down again. Sixth round, everybody's betting on Rocky now because Rocky looks good. He's looking good. He's starting to come back.
Right.
Nails my uncle with a couple of rights. Tony, unbeknownst to everybody, has a broken right hand. So what does he do? He uses his best Sunday punch, that right to the body, left hook. Rocky goes down for a count of 10.
Now, back then, they played fought 15 rounds?
Yes, 15 rounds for the championship.
My goodness. So that's the first fight. What happens in the rematch in 47?
Rematch in 47, Rocky is livid. He wants to get revenge. He's got to get Tony Zale. Everything and every sparring partner he has, every ring time minute he has, all he thinks of is beating Tony Zale.
Right.
I've got to get him. Tony has him in Chicago Stadium. It was supposed to be at Wrigley Field, but they didn't have enough lumber.
Oh, really?
They couldn't build the ring and build the stands in Wrigley Field because there wasn't enough lumber.
Interesting.
Of course, 1947, all the war is over. Everyone's building houses, so there's a lumber shortage.
Gotcha.
Well, so they move it indoors to Chicago Stadium. It's a July 19th, hot summer day. About 105 inside the ring.
105 degrees, and these guys are battling, pummeling on each other for 15 rounds? My goodness.
105 at ringside. About a dozen people faint during the battle.
Really?
Because of the heat. They just couldn't handle it. It was so hot. Got 18,000 people packed in Chicago Stadium. It's a dramatic time for everybody.
Unbelievable.
First round, Tony's got him down. Second round, Rocky's cut. Both eyes are cut. One eye's practically shut. Third round, Tony's got him down again. Looks like an easy, easy game for Tony. Rocky is bleeding from both eyes. Right eye is totally shut. Left eye is just a squint.
So his cut, man, has got to go. He's got to be going insane right now.
You bet. Fourth round, here comes the cut man. He comes in, slashes both eyelashes, releases the blood pressure. Rocky can see at least partially out of his right and a little bit out of his left. He sees that Tony's starting to tire. Why? Because 105 degrees. Tony's the older guy, 35 years old. Rocky's only 29.
Right.
He's got an advantage. The younger guy starts catching up. He starts noticing that Tony's might be playing possum. He's not hitting as hard. Mm-hmm. So he thinks, well, you know, maybe he's just trying to get me wound up here enough where I use all my energy, and then he finishes me off. No, actually, literally the heat is melting Tony away. So that round, Rocky really gets the advantage. Round five, he goes back to his corner, tells his managers, I'm going to put him away this round. He starts beating on Tony just unmercifully. Hits him with probably 20 straight shots without Tony answering. Then Tony gets some energy at the end of the round and at least pulls it off as a draw. Rocky goes back to the corner and he says, this is it. I'm going to finish him this round. He hits him with a couple of right hands, hits him 10 times with his right hand, if you can believe that. Tony is draped over the ropes. The referee calls it. The fight's Rocky's.
That's it.
Rocky thinks he's lost the fight because he's beaten on Tony's back.
Right.
So he thinks he's disqualified. So he's fighting with the referee to get back at Tony.
So he doesn't really know that he's won this fight. Thinks he's being disqualified.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
He ended up winning. So now it's 1-1, and now comes the rubber match, if you will, in 48. And what happened in that fight?
Rubber match, Tony comes out. He knows exactly what he's going to do with Rocky. He knows that he's susceptible to the left hook. Rocky throws a left. Tony hits him with a right to the body. Left hook to the jaw, Rocky goes down. Rocky can't believe it. This is the first couple of punches of the fight, and already he's down.
Yeah.
He tries to jump back up, holds on to the rope, grabs a hold of the ringside, and actually pulls himself up. The ref comes up, gives him a little shake, says, "You okay?" And Rocky says, "I'm ready." Tony starts working on his body. Right to the body, left to the body. Right to the body, left to the body. Overhand right over Rocky's right. It just keeps on going.
Right.
So at the end of the round, it looks like Rocky is going to start rallying. Tony stops him. Stops him from the rally. Almost puts him down at the end of that round. The bell rings. Nobody hears it. And they start fighting. The referee has to jump in between the two to keep them from getting at each other.
Wow.
Round two starts. Here comes Rocky. He said, "You know, I've had enough of a rest over that 30 seconds. I'm ready to go." He starts throwing shots at Tony, throwing that right hand. Tony keeps fending it, blocking, parrying him away. Rocky comes after him. Rocky's the aggressor in the fight in this round. But at the end of the round, Tony hits him with another clean left hook. Rocky's legs shake. You can see his legs buckle when the bell rings. Mm-hmm. He goes back to his corner. Tony goes back to his. Tony and his corner men say, "Okay, this is it. We need to take him out now." They're at Rupert Stadium in New Jersey.
Right.
About 35,000 people in attendance.
That's a good crowd. Pretty good crowd.
So it's another good crowd. Tony's outside. That's an advantage for an older guy, 36 now, looking at his regaining of his championship. He comes out. Rocky throws a left, right to the body, left hook. Down goes Rocky.
And Rocky, that was it?
Nope. He pulls himself up.
Oh, he
pulls
himself up
one more time. The fight should have been stopped there, but the referee was real brave.
Yeah, I see that.
Rocky go one more time. My uncle just waits his time. Rocky throws another left out. Tony goes under that left, hits him with a right to the body, left hook, and Rocky is gone. He goes down in sections, as they describe it in the book. He hits his legs first, then his butt, then his back, and then his head hits the canvas so hard that he gets an immediate concussion, and he is gone.
Wow.
Referee counts him out. They have trouble reviving Rocky. My uncle's watching, and he's concerned. Mm-hmm. As we say on the front of the book, one time he hit a guy so hard, he thought he'd killed him.
My goodness.
What happened with this one.
So what exactly happened? Did he eventually come out of it?
He came out of it. Just couldn't believe it. His corner couldn't believe how poorly he fought. But again, Tony was on the rise. He was ready to take his championship back. Second man in history to win the middleweight title back.
Folks, we are speaking with Ted Zale, the author of Tony Zale, the Man of Steel. Of course, Tony Zale, one of the greatest boxers of all time. He just recounted a remarkable job recounting the historic trilogy between Tony and Rocky Graziano, who has an eerie similar name to another pretty big fighter, Rocky Marciano. Pretty interesting names there. But I got to ask you, I mean, it was remarkable, just listen to that, Ted, how you are able to recount all three of those fights in great detail. I mean, what was it like compiling this piece of work for you? And how is it so vivid in your mind?
Well, number one, I started it back in 1987 when I started interviewing my uncle. My uncle and his wife took my wife and I out for dinner in Chicago, a little Italian restaurant. Mm-hmm. By the end of the evening, my uncle said, "You know what I want you to do?" And I said, "What, Unc? You know, just give me an idea. I'll try anything." I said, "You want me to try to be a light heavyweight champion? I'll work at that." Unc smiled and said, "No." He said, "What I want you to do is write my biography." So for the next 7 years of his life, 8 years of his life, he came up here to Lansing on long weekends, once every other month, or, you know, near the end, it was almost every month.
Right.
We interviewed. We talked about the fights. We talked about the history he had gone through, the things he had seen, the people he had helped. It wasn't always easy. You know, you become a champion because you work at it. He had a lot of faith. A lot of charity in mind and a lot of action in mind. Mm-hmm. He spent 36 years after he left boxing in 48 working with the kids in Chicago, helping them out of the ghetto. If it hadn't been for him, many of them at his funeral said, Ted, I would have been dead on the streets of Chicago if it hadn't been for Tony. He helped me that much. He gave me direction. He gave me some reason. He gave me discipline. And he helped me become the man I am today. So the real story after the ring is far more important than the story in the ring.
And then, you know, another aspect to that, Ted, when I was diving into and, of course, sort of going through the description of the book and reading the story and biography of Tony Zale online, was that he battled with poverty after his fight career. I mean, why was that? Because, you know, going back to even the days of Joe Louis was another fighter, a Detroit legend, who even after his fighting career and becoming the champion of the world, his finances did not replicate his career. Why is that so common, and why was that the case with Tony Zale as well?
Well, with Tony, it was a divorce. Mm-hmm. A divorce and a bad investment. Back in the 40s, late 40s, there was a fellow by the name of Tucker. He had an automobile, an idea. The Tucker automobile actually became a reality and became a movie as well.
Did it? Wow.
That's another story, of course. But Tony invested in the Tucker based on the advice of his relatives. And unfortunately, this unbelievable automobile never made it because the big automobile companies really didn't want them to compete.
Yeah.
And Tony invested a lot of what he had in his ring monies in the Tucker and lost everything. Back in 48, 49 timeframe, the Securities Exchange Commission really had 30 or 40 charges against Tucker for the way he was doing his offerings of stock. And as it turned out, he was totally exonerated. But by 1951, the idea was gone, and GM and Ford and Chrysler had already picked up many of his patents. So the Tucker automobile was a dream and a great opportunity that just didn't pan out. Of course, Tony divorced by 1952. He was down to his last pennies. Worked four part-time jobs through the 50s in order to survive and pay for his child support.
Wow. So that when you put it that way, that makes sense then. Oh, boy. What a story, folks. Again, Tony Zale, the Man of Steel, is the name of the book. Of course, authored by Ted Zale and Clay Moyle. Clay, a great boxing historian. Really briefly, before we let you go here, Ted, remarkable account of Tony Zale's life, and I can't wait to get this book myself and really dive into it. First off, before we get you out of here, for you, when going through and talking with your uncle, I always say when you have such a man who's gone through so much and done so many great things in life, you can learn a lot from that individual. What did you learn about yourself when compiling this unbelievable piece of work and putting it together?
Well, number one, you have to have faith. You have to believe in yourself and believe in the good Lord. Uncle Tony had a lot of drive, so in terms of the action side, that means you don't sit on your laurels and just wait for the good Lord to deliver it. You get out there and work for it.
You got to do something, right?
You bet. And this weekend, Saturday and Sunday at Reno's West, we're having our first book signing from 3 to 6 p.m. each day.
There you go. All right, and how can people out there purchase this book?
You can get it on Amazon.com, or you can pick it up from us on Saturday and Sunday at Reno's West.
How about that, folks? Well, you heard it from the man himself, Ted Zale, the author of Tony Zale, the Man of Steel. Ted, thanks so much. We got to stay in touch. This is remarkable.
You bet.
And we also have the book right here live in studio. We'll take a snippet of it and post it on our Facebook page, my Twitter page, and my Instagram page, and a ton of great photos here as well. We'll post a few of those as well, folks. So keep it locked on our social media pages as well. Well, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show and put a bow on it, folks. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports will return in just a sec. Well, Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, folks, only 5 minutes left in the show. We just finished talking with Ted Zale, who is the co-author of Tony Zale, The Man of Steel. He co-authored the book along with boxing historian Clay Moyle. Wow, what a fantastic interview, folks. What a fantastic account of Tony's life. Again, we will post on our Facebook pages, my Twitter page as well, and my Instagram on how to get the book and also info on the book signing coming up as well if you want to purchase this fantastic piece of work, folks. What an interview, folks. If you missed it, again, we'll post this show like we do each and every weekday right after it airs. So, Alex, my goodness. I mean, you were sitting behind the glass witnessing that. I mean, what a story, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I gotta look online and try to get that book. What a story. I mean, you've seen a lot of biographies about boxers before, but for this guy to drive up on weekends and long weekends in Lansing and really delve into his story, I mean, the accounts compared to several other autobiographies are probably a lot different. This seems to be pretty in-depth, which is pretty neat.
Certainly, and you know, Ted is such a nice guy. He actually, the copy that we have in here, this is my copy. He just gave it to me. So how about that?
Yeah.
He's a fantastic guy. Gotta love that. You know, and just sitting there listening to Ted speak, you know, I grew up, a lot of you guys know, I told this before on the show as well, my grandfather was such a big boxing enthusiast. I remember each and every Friday and Saturday night, you know, going over my grandparents' house, and, you know, my grandfather, he always had ESPN on with the Friday night fights, and then on Saturdays he would have Showbox on. They would have all the Showtime boxing matches on. And sitting there and listening to him break down the fights, I just miss when boxing was on the level of an NFL or an NBA or any of the mainstream sports. Now, it's certainly lost a bit of its luster, but it's great when you dive into the history of it. And hey, I don't know if we'll ever see Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fight. I really, really hope that fight happens, because I tell you what, it can do so much for the popularity of boxing. But Alex, I will always say this, boxing won't be fully back until you have that American heavyweight champion that garners a lot of attention. Boxing in many ways died in America, when Mike Tyson died, point blank period, because Tyson was that last American heavyweight that everyone flocked to the televisions to watch.
That's a good point, but look, I mean, Floyd's getting his fight. You don't think Floyd is that great American fighter?
But still, he's not a heavyweight, though. I mean, it's something
you're
about that heavyweight position.
Heavyweight.
Yeah, because
okay.
that's watching two guys who are heavyweights go at it in the ring. I mean, it's nothing like
that. I agree with the heavyweights, but at least there is a good fighter right now in America. I think that aside from just the heavyweights, Americans do look for a prominent fighter, regardless of the weight class.
And you know what? And actually, you know, one of my weekend winners 2 weeks ago, right now, I forget his name. It eludes me right now. But the heavyweight champion of the world right now is an American fighter. And I forget his name. I want to mention it on tomorrow's show. It eludes me right now. But, man, what a great interview with Ted Zale, though. Again, we'll post all the information on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Also, signing day, folks, we'll have coverage of that on tomorrow's show. Again, Mark D'Antonio is addressing the media in now 45 minutes down at Spartan Stadium. We will be in the house for that and have a lot of that talk on tomorrow's Current Sports. But this is my least favorite time of the show, where we have to say goodbye. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic Wednesday, and be easy, people.